From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
As the world looks to Russia to walk back from the brink after NATO member Turkey shot down a Russian jet, Ankara is apparently expanding its war against the press. 2 days after a convoy of Russian journalists came under attack with an anti-tank shell hitting their press convoy near the Turkish-Syrian border Tuesday, injuring 3 members of their group, a prominent journalist inside the U.S.'s NATO ally faces charges of espionage and treason for running an expose of Turkey's involvement with armed terrorists in Syria. A Turkish prosecutor asked the court to imprison Can Dündar, the editor-in-chief of Cumhuriyet, pending trial for espionage and treason after his newspaper published photos of weapons it said were transferred to Syrian insurgents by Turkish intelligence. The front-page articles published in May claimed that Turkey's National Intelligence Organization smuggled weapons and trucks into Syria and was caught doing so twice in 2004. The trucks were allegedly stopped and searched by police, with photos and video of the contents being obtained by Cumhuriyet. According to the paper, the trucks were carrying 6 steel containers with 1,000 artillery shells, 50,000 machine gun rounds, 30,000 heavy machine gun rounds, and 1,000 mortar shells. The arms were reportedly delivered to extremists fighting against the Syrian government, which Ankara wants ousted. Turkish authorities denied the allegations, saying that the trucks were carrying aid to Syrian ethnic Turkmen, labeling their interception as treason and espionage. It was unclear whether the weapons were used by ethnic Turk fighters inside Syria in their attack on a Russian pilot as he parachuted from the plane that was downed by Turkey, or on the reported attack on a pair of Russian helicopters that were on a rescue mission following that incident. In Tuesday's attack on the convoy of journalists, 2 RT crew members and a journalist from TASS were injured when an anti-tank shell hit the convoy near the border. Earlier this month, Ankara launched raids on various media outlets, resulting in more than 70 arrests of journalists, with another 75 being terminated by the government after it seized their place of employment. According to a number of international monitoring organizations, Turkey has more journalists in prison than any other nation on earth. Syria's Turkmen were at the center of Ankara's attack on the Russian plane and its pilots, and the weapons shipments. But the group is largely unknown to Westerners. CCTV's Natalie Carney filed this report from the Turkish-Syrian border.
Like the Kurds of Kobani, the Turkmen of the Turkmen Mountains are gaining notoriety in the fight for Syria. It was Turkmen rebel fighters who claimed to have shot at the Russian pilots as they parachuted out of their plummeting jet. Syria's Turkmen brigades number between 2 and 10,000 fighters, engaged in combat against ISIL fighters as well as Syrian government troops. As Russia deploys surface-to-air missiles to Syria and Turkey reinforces its border, the Turkmen could be caught in the middle. Natalie Carney for CCTV, Yeliday on the Turkey-Syria border.
The government of Saudi Arabia appears poised to do yet again what it seems to do best, execute another group of dissidents. The New York Times reported Friday that Riyadh plans to execute more than 50 people convicted of terrorism. The Saudi newspaper Okaz reported Thursday that 55 people were awaiting execution for, quote, terrorist crimes, closed quote, without specifying when the executions would occur. And on Monday, the semi-official newspaper Al Riyadh reported that 52 people would be put to death soon, but according to the Times, it later pulled the story from its website without explanation. Okaz claimed that some of those facing execution were affiliated with Al-Qaeda, but others are reportedly Shia dissidents from Awamiya, a large Shiite town in the oil-producing eastern province where the government has suppressed demonstrations. Awamiya residents responded to the news by closing off roads leading into the city with burning debris. The charges against the Awamiya residents include sedition, attacks on security officials, and interference in neighboring Bahrain, which has also experienced unrest and a Saudi occupation since 2011. The Times said that diplomats in Riyadh had been assured that the Saudis will not execute Shiites convicted after protests. A prominent Western human rights group said that Saudi Arabia has already executed more than 150 people this year, mostly by public beheading, the most in 20 years. Meanwhile, Saudi warplanes launched fresh air strikes on Yemen, bringing more death and destruction to that impoverished country. The latest attacks targeted houses in Taiz province, with at least 7 people killed. Thursday, an attack on a market in the same province also caused casualties. Press TV's Mohammed Al-Attab filed this report from Yemen's capital, Sana'a.
So far, these kinds of air bombardments continues unabated without this, in spite of the Yemeni people protests and rallies outside the United Nations. And also, they have within the last 24 hours, the Saudi air bombardments have also targeted another area in the province of Taiz, where at least 5 people have been killed. Now, because now the Saudi Arabia is making and putting a tight siege on the province, as it is also making this kind of siege all over the country, so the humanitarian aid efforts cannot get into this the province.
The UN has expressed concern about the worsening humanitarian situation in Taiz. The southern city is being targeted by Saudi airstrikes on almost a daily basis. Riyadh launched its war against Yemen on March 26th. The assault has so far left nearly 7,200 people dead. Last Sunday's election results in Argentina presented a pair of surprises, a squeaker victory for the presidential candidate of the right, and a clear parliamentary majority for the left. For more on what this might mean for Argentina, for the region, and for the global geopolitical landscape, we spoke with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, from Managua, Nicaragua, via Skype on Friday. We had been talking, our prognostication skills, unfortunately, a little weak on this particular one, with everyone else, right?
As far as Argentina goes, Don, the result, and it wasn't a surprise in a way, because it was very clear after the first round that the right wing were in a much stronger position than the government candidate Daniel Scioli, because on the first round, Mauricio Macri and his team won, I think it was 34% of the vote, and the government candidate Daniel Scioli only won, I think it was 36, almost 37% of the vote. But so he had a very slim lead on that first round.
Right.
And it was up to Daniel Scioli and the government team to convince the 20% of voters that voted for a guy called Massa, who was the third candidate. He came third in that first round election on October the 25th. And the government had to convince over half of Massa's supporters to vote with the government and not with Macri.
Right. It looks like he got half, almost exactly half, because he ended up with about 46-47% of the vote, right?
Well, I think it was actually closer than that. And I think Macri got something like 51%.
Is that the final
51
show?
Point something. Mm-hmm. And Scioli got kind of 48 point something. So
he got
the
like
positions were reversed in the second round. It was Macri that won by a very small margin.
Right.
And that's, you know, I mean, if you look at that in statistical terms, that's the margin of error, isn't it? 2-3% is regarded as the margin of error for most statistics.
Right.
And so it was very, very much an even result, and it just happened that Macri winged it. So you know, the fair play to him and his team. They did better than Scioli and his team, and it's just bad news for the Argentinian people.
And for the larger project. Okay, so we have this situation where it is that close. And you have this sector of the population that supports the, that supported the government candidate, that supported the Kirchners, and they're mobilized some. And Macri, you know, his tendency and some of the things he expressed
is to turn towards the neoliberal model, not the regional integration model, the U.S., and not you know, the locals and all of that. And with all that that means, with an economy the size of Argentina's and also the example to Brazil. So how do the forces of the left and other progressive forces move forward from here?
Well, perhaps first we should note, Don, that in many ways the result of the presidential runoff was a contradictory result in terms of the electoral cycle that has just taken place in Argentina, because in the legislature, the Frente para la Victoria, the Front for Victory, which is Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner's party, and the party that Daniel Scioli was standing as the presidential candidate for, they have a majority in the Senate.
Oh, good.
An unassailable majority in the Senate.
Good.
And they also have a majority in the lower house, too.
Well, we in the United States know what that means, because the reason Barack Obama hasn't accomplished much for the left or even the center here, according to the popular myth, is the Republicans had first the ability to filibuster in the Senate and then captured both houses. So maybe Macri can't do anything in terms of moving Argentina away from the region.
Well, I think that at an international level that he will cause a lot of damage. And at a domestic level, he's going to have a very strong fight on his hands. And in many ways, and that may be a positive thing in terms of building a natural majority in Argentina for the left and for progressive forces. Because the weakness of Daniel Scioli was that his profile, his biographical profile, was not dissimilar to that of Macri in terms of his social background, his professional accomplishments and all that. And he was very, very similar business-style person to Macri. He just happened to be a progressive business-style person and not a right-wing reactionary business-style person. And so, and I think that was one of the big weaknesses of the campaign. But, and there's no point going over what's happened. I know what's happened's happened. But and what that does mean is that the balance of forces in the legislature and between the legislature and the executive does mean that there's a very strong base for Scioli and Cristina Fernandez and their political grouping to build a natural majority over the next 4 years and flatten the right wing in the next election. So and let's see what happens. Who knows what's going to happen, but at a domestic level. One thing at a... Let's stay with the domestic stuff. Because one of the things that has happened is that Mauricio Macri has named his likely cabinet, because he takes office on December the 10th. And so the people that he's naming for government indicate very, very clearly which way he's going. Now, one of the things that you and I were talking about last time was the fact that if Macri won, he'd take Argentina backwards. And his campaign motto was "Cambiemos," let's change, you know. And what he was talking about was not change in a progressive way towards a future, towards a different way of doing things, but a change backwards to the old way of doing things that crippled Argentina all through at the end of the 90s. And so you can see his the person that he's putting in charge of the security portfolio in the government is a woman called Patricia Bullrich, who's an extreme right-wing person, very closely associated with even the CIA. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at an article by Stella Coloni, who's an a veteran Argentinian, a really outstanding Argentinian writer and journalist. And so Patricia Bullrich, was a person who in 2001, at the time during the Argentinian crisis, when the right-wing government at the time was trying to implement structural adjustment style austerity, austerity is just the new name for the old style structural adjustment, right? So what she was trying to implement back then in the government at that time, I've forgotten, there were so many governments in a very short period of time, but what she did was cut pensions, cut social security benefits, and that's, she is now occupying a key role in, although not in the economic, one of the economic portfolios, she's occupying a key role in Macri's new government. And I'm just looking, so I'm just looking to see who the there are various people from previous administrations, and the person who's being named as the head of finances is a guy called Alfonso Pratt Gray, and I think he, almost certain that he was a senior executive for JP Morgan. And he was the ex-president of the central bank at the time that Eduardo Duhalde was trying to solve the Argentina's debt crisis at, in 2002 and early 2003. So, and you've got what, it's very clear from those, just those two appointments that Macri has announced for his cabinet, that he's going backwards. He's going back to that. He's bringing people back into government who were key figures in the destruction of Argentina through between 2000 and 2003, when Néstor Kirchner took office and began what was an epic rescue of Argentina's economy and society. And so, and I, both myself and my colleague Jorge Capellan, we were astonished when Macri won, because we expected Scioli to just wing it, maybe by the same margin that Macri won. And so the reason we were so surprised is because the Argentina has a sophisticated electorate, and you don't expect people to commit social and economic suicide.
Yeah, but you've got the media, like in many parts of that whole region and much of the West, you know, this corporate media that, you know, is not objective whatsoever, that has a very strong bias for those candidates. They get a lot of good play in the media, and that kind of colors people's perception of what's happening.
That's especially true in Argentina, where the media is extremely concentrated in the hands of the right wing. And as they are in Chile, for example. So you may well be right that was a decisive factor. It was certainly an important factor. Right. And another very important factor, if not, in my opinion, it was probably the decisive factor, was the decline in the economics position for people in Argentina as a result of the collapse in international commodity prices.
Right.
So anyway, again, one can argue about all that till the cows come home. But the nitty gritty is that Macri's named his cabinet, and he's fulfilling all the worst forecasts about going back in time to the bad old days of the late 1990s and the years of crisis from 2000 to 2003. And that's what he's going to do to Argentina domestically.
Let's stay on domestics now, in terms of a response. You had, during the crisis, a mobilization of workers when they were closing factories. The workers took them over and started running them. You've had social mobilization throughout the period from Néstor de Kirchner all the way through Cristina's administration. All kinds of benefits that have uplifted people there. And a lot of those folks are still mobilized, and I'm assuming emboldened or at least encouraged by the fact that they have a majority of the legislature. So how do they fight back?
No, I know. I think that's a very important point to make, Don, that the Macri is going to have a very, very difficult time, not because the Frente para la Victoria and associated political forces are going to set out to sabotage his government in the way he and his media colleagues and corporate colleagues in the reactionary sections of the Argentinian elite had deliberately tried to sabotage the governments of Néstor Kirchner and Cristina Fernández. And Cristina Fernández has publicly said that they're not going to engage in that kind of situation, in that kind of behavior, sabotaging. the country, because that damages the country, and they're just not going to do that. But what they are going to do is defend what you pointed out, the victories of working class people and vulnerable sectors of Argentina society over the last 10 to 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to defend that. And as you point out, the fact that they have a majority in the legislature is a very strong point in their favor. Now, I think that Macri, I'll actually be surprised if Macri actually finishes his term of office. Because I think that he is somebody geared for confrontation. And if he tries to confront people in Argentina, just that they don't want that. They want somebody who's proactive, propositive, who makes proposals and carries them out. That's what they want. Mm-hmm. They don't want somebody who just engages in conflict in a completely gratuitous way, which is what Macri has very clearly done, certainly at an international level, and that seems likely to be his style at a domestic level, because he doesn't have any coherent policies. He has no coherent policies apart from the ridiculous austerity agenda that has failed in Europe and failed everywhere else that's been tried.
Right.
So he's heading for a fall over the next probably 2 years. It probably might take 2 years to work out. Right. But after 2 years, my prediction is that he politically will be in deep crisis.
You know, now looking at the international... certainly, the fight that Fernandez de Kirchner just had over the last year and a half with the Vulture funds gained her tremendous respect internationally. You know, there were two votes, I think, at the UN General Assembly over the last 2 years that, you know, showed you how the global community takes sides on that issue. I'm assuming that, you know, that stand and the stand towards debt generally that she and her late husband took is associated with the gains that were made by the, you know, the poorer sectors, working people and such over the course of their terms. So as the struggle on the domestic level is clear to the majority constituency as represented in the legislature, is it possible that is going to operate ultimately to discredit Macri's attempts on the international level to turn the clock back?
Yeah, he may negotiate stuff because among the people that he's naming in his cabinet are people who actually. Part that I think one of the people, I'm not sure if it was Bullrich or one of the other people, was actually part of the Vulture Funds of Paul Singer's task force. Paul Singer, the leader of the Vulture Funds, trying to extort $1.5 billion from Argentina. He and his colleagues set up a task force to attack Argentina in the media, through the courts, in all the ways that they could organize, mobilize to undermine the position of Argentina, and one of those people is a member of Macri's cabinet.
So this is like a bank robber comes into a bank, doesn't get away with all of the money, and then comes back and gets hired as the bank manager.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Whoa!
And that's exactly what it's like. Hmm. And so, but the thing is, whatever agreement Macri may reach with the gangsters who run the Vulture Funds, Paul Singer and his fellow gangsters,
has to go through the legislature, right?
Has to go through the legislature,
right.
And it's obviously not going to make it. So,
right.
You know, that's what I mean when I said a little while ago that within 2 years, Macri is going to be in a deep political crisis, because he's going to try and push stuff through. And there may even be ways in the Argentinian constitution that allow him to operate by decree on certain issues. Who knows?
Right.
And I'm not an expert on the Argentinian constitution, but whatever he does, he's going to be in a very bitter conflict because he's not a conciliator. He's not a unifier. He's demonstrated in his very first pronouncement, in his very first press conference after the election, he attacked Venezuela and said that he was going to seek to expel Venezuela from Mercosur.
Right.
No, that's megalomania. That is pure megalomania. Who does he think he is? He's an idiot.
Yeah.
That... No, to state that, even before getting into government and finding out what are the real concrete relations between the Bolivarian Republic of Argentina and the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela and the Republic of Argentina. He doesn't know the nitty gritty and the very specific details of Venezuela's financial support for Argentina.
Right.
For example.
Right.
And does he think he's going to get that support from the vulture funds? He's an idiot. The man's he's just completely out of his depth.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Ukraine, for example, with the what it's lost in terms of revenues and also in terms of energy subsidies by the way it's been behaving towards Russia, and thinking that the U.S. and EU were going to white and IMF and everybody were going to white knight them out of it, and the economy there is in total collapse. People are in the winter already, starting almost the winter. Their energy supplies are dubious at best. And, are they going to do better by Argentina?
And it's possible that Macri may get some sense that, after his first week in office. Because he's up against, and he'll be dealing with people like, for example, Michelle Bachelet in Chile. Now, Michelle Bachelet may sympathize in some areas with Macri, for example, in economic policy.
Right.
But people like Bachelet, people like Peña Nieto in Mexico, people like Juan Manuel Santos in Colombia, while they may sympathize to some extent with Macri, they're going to teach him quickly, I think, that it's completely counterproductive to be so confrontational, and that there are ways of getting what you want without destroying the ground you're walking on, chopping off the branch that you're sitting on.
It's not a zero-sum game either. If you look at, in general, how so many of the actual right-wing governments have been, getting more and more deeply involved with the regional integration project and standing against the United States, despite their political affinity with it, on so many issues. A, because their constituency requires it, but B, to do the things to satisfy their constituency also requires it, like making sure they have food, electricity, fuel, and all of that.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if Macri does get sense. Because he might be just an out-and-out extremist like Alvaro Uribe.
Right.
With whom he's very close, by the way.
Mm,
and there's no doubt at all that of all the right-wing figures that are currently in power, or at least in government, in Latin America and the Caribbean, Macri is probably the most deeply involved in, as an individual, in his personal relationships and business relationships and political relationships in the United States.
Mm.
So it may well be that he thinks that he'll be able to maintain a profile very much aligned with the United States and continue to be extremely aggressive, but it won't get him very far.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.